session number 9955, reel number 8.
Mr. Calvert, reel 8. We were discussing the rats that were present in the sector around about St. Julian. What sort of a nuisance were the rats to you?
A very big nuisance. You got to watch your food, and if you didn't, they'd be into your haversack. And then there was the unpleasantness of them running around. And there always, if anybody was had to be buried, it wasn't long before you could see where they'd been at each end of the grave, going down to the body. There were loathsome rats. They'd every facility there, because it was what I describe as a charnel house, that area. Been two tremendous battles there, haven't they? Over that area.
How did you try? You said you tried to protect your food from them. How did you go about that?
Well, put all you could in the mess tin and seal it off in the tin itself. And then the other, well, you had to take a chance and have it where the sentry could watch points. Put it together in a corner of the firing step where there was always someone around, and that protected it.
Did they frighten people, the rats, or was it more just the irritation of them running about?
I don't think they were. You'd be frightened by them, but it was just the loathsome habits of them. You know, they'd eat human flesh if they had a chance. And that, of course, didn't go down very well if it weren't your pals who'd just been buried.
Were there many dead bodies around in the area? You've indicated there perhaps were.
Not as you could notice, but they were just loosely buried anywhere. You couldn't get the body out, you just buried them, and then you put a cross up.
You actually did that, did you? Bury
people? No, I didn't take part in that.
Who would do it then?
Well, anybody who was available.
It just never fell to your lot?
It was always night time.
Was it just that it never fell to your lot, or did you not fancy doing it and sort of make yourself scarce?
I didn't like the idea. No. Then, of course, from the time I went in the first time in the trenches, I was permanent night sentry. While the other chaps...
I'll come to that, actually, because we'll move on to what you did as a centre. What about this business of there being dead bodies around? Were the bodies disturbed often in the ground?
Shell fire. There's a lot of shelling in that area.
What effect did the bodies coming back into view have on you?
Well, you took it in the only way you could, ignore it. And then...
Was the smell bad?
Yes. Shocking smell. Seemed to cling to everything you had. When you was having your food, you couldn't... Seemed to taste it.
Is there any way you can describe the smell now? I know it's difficult.
It's a sickly smell. Nasty, sickly smell. And... You never forgot that smell.
What about lice? Were lice a problem to you at that time?
Yes, I was absolutely, like everybody else, more than you wanted.
How soon was it before they started appearing from when you arrived in the line?
Well, you picked them up as soon as you joined the battalion, because the chaps you went to had them, and of course they'd soon find another body. And that was it. You couldn't cope with them.
How were they a nuisance?
Irritation. running round back of your neck, under your armpits, under your, and round your other parts. They were, I think they were breeding faster than you could kill them.
Did they bite at all, or was it just the scurrying round?
No, they didn't bite, but you got that itching feeling with them. Very unpleasant. Always wanting to move. Bit awkward on parade, as you can imagine.
How did you try and keep the numbers down?
Well, first chance we had when we left anywhere where it were convenient on the line, you used to take your shirt off, underpants, and you had a candle and a little tin can with a candle underneath, and you used to take them off and put them on the heated service, which killed them.
So you pick them off with two fingers and then drop. Were there any other methods you tried?
Well, you could try a lighted match, but you might spoil your shirt in the seams. That's where they're lodged. Every seam seemed to be full of eggs.
Did you try the match method?
No, it was too dangerous. You might lose your shirt. So what I had to do was to scrape it off, the eggs off into the, and then more or less cook them as a simpler way to, I could say, of doing it, killing the eggs.
But you couldn't keep pace with it?
No. No.
Were there any other pests in the trenches? Mice or flies?
Yes. In some places there were mice. Because the French had been there before at one period, and they'd built small little lean-to where you could just go in and probably sleep. We had 6 or 7 feet of earth above you. And generally we found they were full of field mice, I should take them to be.
Were they a nuisance?
Yes. You were laid down, you'd probably feel them running over you, all that. They were a pest.
Any other pests?
No, I think that was the main thing, lice and rats and mice.
How did the weather conditions affect you in the line at that point?
Well, if it rained hard, you did the best you could with your ground sheet, and your tin hat took it off your face and head. And then you pick a spot where you could sit on the firing step and try and get the rain to run off you. Sometimes if you're short of water, you'd try and collect some in the ground sheet and probably get a pint of water that way. If you got wet through, of course, you automatically had to dry yourself out by your own body heat. There's no other way.
What about the cold? Because you'd gone out in spring, 16.
Mm.
Was it still cold then, that year?
No, I didn't feel it. No, I didn't feel the cold. In a trench, below the surface, no matter how strong the wind is, you seem to be able to keep warm. It's when you're out stood in the open where you feel the cold, but down in a trench, it's rather peculiar that way, but you're a lot warmer. It's more dangerous, of course.
In the St. Julian area, had the was the ground flooded at this time?
No, it wasn't flooded, but it was very muddy. You see, the trenches were not, you didn't dig down.
You mentioned that, yes.
You had to build up. And of course, that was where the water used to drain off into the trench.
When it rained, did it become much of a problem, the drainage of the trenches?
Yes, yes it did. You had to try and find a place where it had a deeper part and let it drain there. Then avoid it if you could.
Would you actually dig the deeper part out, especially, or...?
Well, you'd have a little gradient from your firing step area and to drain it away so you're as dry as it were possible.
How did your health keep up during this first few months in the Ypres area? Did it affect your health at all?
No, I never felt a thing. I was felt very well.
How about the rest of the men? Was there any frostbite, trench fever?
No, not at that time. It was towards the December, January-December period when that took place.
If we could go through a typical day's routine at that time. Now, you mentioned that you were always on Evening Sentry.
Yes.
If you imagine that you were going to be on that, and take us through from morning stand 2, what you'd do in the day, right back through to morning stand 2. If you could just, what would you do in stand 2 in the morning at that area?
Well, everybody was on the firing step, watching the German line, in case there was a sudden attack. And as soon as it started getting light, of course, you got your head down, otherwise you weren't long before you'd probably get shot.
Could you all look over the top at this time?
More or less, yes. Yes, we're always ready with the rifle. Then...
Weren't you rather at the mercy of fixed machine guns and going along the top of the parapet at that time of the morning then?
Well, if you kept your head well down and just saw your eyes were just looking over the top, that was sufficient. And probably you'd have to be a very good machine gunner to get a range like that.
And this would be in at stand 2 took place at just before dawn or...?
Half an hour before dawn.
And how long did it go on for in your...?
As soon as it started breaking daylight.
So half an hour?
Yes, probably half hour. And then you set about... What had to be done?
What did have to be done?
Well, you may have had some casualties and you couldn't get them out owing to the stand 2 period. The stretcher bearers might have been too busy to do it, and then if it was a communication trench at all possible, you would help to get some of these people out.
You'd help the stretcher bearers then, would you?
Oh yes, if it were needed, because there were 4 of them to accompany, but sometimes there were more casualties than they could cope with.
Did you do that occasionally?
Yes, I've helped to carry chaps out.
How difficult was it to get a stretcher bearer down a communication trail?
Very hard work. You just keep resting, keep taking it in turns, because probably there was only one in front and one behind, and you had a chap, heavy built chap, and it wasn't just a level walk, you were up and down where the trench had probably been blown in, or so it was very hard work.
How about the zigzags? Was it built so you could get around them?
Yes, you could manoeuvre around there.
What about the person who'd been shot? How did they behave during such a journey?
Well, they took it in the only way they possibly could, and that was make no complaint. They knew probably that we were doing the best we could for them, and it wasn't up to them to try and make things more difficult. No, they just took it. You might have had the... because the battalion doctor would be waiting at the first aid post to deal with them straight away.
Where would the first aid post be? Would that be in the reserve line?
Battalion headquarters, generally, somewhere close to there. And then, if it was possible, they were carried out to the ambulances.
And you'd do that, you'd be the same people?
No, you left, you went back. As soon as you handed them over, there'd probably be Army Medical Corps men there. Hand it over to them to deal with, and you went straight back to your company.
Yeah. Now, if there hadn't been any casualties, what would after stand 2, what would you be first on, having been on night duty?
Prepare breakfast. That was to make a make a fire without smoke. That'd be wood you carried with you.
Was there a special technique, or were you just very...
Well, you cut wood into strips no thicker than a matchstick, and you wanted quite a lot. And you dig a little trench so you could stand your mess tin across and put the fire underneath. You had nothing else to stand it on, and that was the best way, and you could blow at one end and get a good fire going. And boil some water in your canteen and then make hot drink, tea, with sugar and sometimes tin milk. And that was the nicest part of the day, a good hot drink. Then you had your food, whatever was going. Eat what you had, your own rations, you ate what you wanted.
And what would you normally choose to eat in the morning?
A couple of biscuits, some cheese, or a touch of jam on, or something like bacon, boiled bacon.
What were the biscuits like?
Hard. They're very nourishing. Very nourishing, because to tell you that point, there was a lieutenant farmer, you've heard of Huntley and Palmer's, a lieutenant farmer, he told us there was more nourishment in one biscuit than there was in a loaf of bread, and he must have known because he belonged to the firm.
He was with your battalion, was he?
Yes, yes, in the company I was in. then if you want on sentry, sat with your back to the firing step and your glass at the end of your bayonet, and it was just about 2 inches by 3 inches, and you could just manoeuvre it and you could watch the German line, and that's what you had to do then until you were relieved. Probably you did 2 hours. Then you might be off. It depended on the number of men. You might be off then what... you happen only did it once in the day. There'd be enough men to cover it. And then if there was any trenches which had been blown in, you'd try and just make a way through without exposing yourself. And that was done by getting a sandbag full and pushing it into the hole where it had been blown in, start, and then push it in front of you and keep building up. You never expose yourself, but you could do it that way. Then of course, soon it went out, you could load all the stuff back in and you had a good sound defence again. But it was hard work. But it had to be done for your own safety, because you couldn't go there to another company, because there might be a 6 or 7 open space where the German probably trained a machine gun on.
What else would you do on the day? Would you
clean your rifle?
How did you go about that in the circumstances of mud and everything?
Well, you had to make sure, because that was the only protection you had, really. You were on your own, and that was your protection if you was to go anywhere, so you make sure that it was clean, oiled and working, and you had 5 rounds or whatever you wanted in the magazine, and make sure it was in good order. And then they used to issue a cover at one time for mud, to keep the mud off. It was like a cover which went over the rifle.
Was it the whole rifle or just the area of the working?
Just the working part. It was a very good idea. It kept the mud out, because you could be walking along a trench and it might just move away from your shoulder, or you're carrying it, it might just stick into the side of a trench or get dirt in, and then you had the old trouble of cleaning it out. Otherwise you might burst the barrel if you fired.
Did you carry it with you almost everywhere you went?
Yes. Yes, you had to do. Yes. Never left it.
What else would happen during the day? Would you get any chance for a rest if you'd been on night?
Yes, you went onto the firing step and had a sleep. And if anything took place, the sentry would just kick you or nudge, you know, and, you know, then he wanted some attention. It used to spread out onto firing steps. There were plenty of room.
And how long would you try and... would you manage to get sleep during the day?
2 or 3 hours in the morning, and then you'd be moving around lunchtime, having another go at making a meal, and then get ready for the evening. Stamp to and working parties, because you worked all night.
So you get 2 or 3 hours in the morning. Would you get much sleep in the afternoon?
Oh, you could reckon you'd be 7 or 8 hours, probably. Wasn't
over
too bad
day.
Over the day. Wasn't too bad.
So you didn't... Did the fatigue build up over the 3 or 4 days you were in the line, or were you, did you manage to keep it at a fairly well even keel?
Oh, I kept it fairly well. Depending, of course, on the bombardment. If you got a lot of shelling and minenwerfers over, which blew quite a long line of trenching, that was another thing you had to watch during the day. You used to fire them during the day.
I'll come to minenwerfers because that's a point I want to raise with you. During the day, did you have any other special duties to do that you were responsible for?
Well, no, really, as long as you were there if needed.
You
to
were
be
just
do
very
a fatigue.
Much an ordinary rifleman then?
Yes.
You didn't get set on as a servant or as a sniper or anything like that?
No, not until later.
Were there any, sounds daft, but recreations that you do? How did you keep yourself amused during a long day if, say, you weren't sleeping? How would a group of you amuse yourselves?
They'd talk about the family and talk about somebody in the regiment they knew, and some were going to go on leave, some had been on leave, and of course there was a general conversation which used to carry on for quite a time.
Was there any restriction on how many could gather in a group?
No.
To talk? Or, I mean.
No, it was amongst your own platoon. Your company, you see, had a big front, and then your platoon had a frontage, and then you were spread out fairly well.
How many would gather to talk together?
4 or 5, probably.
Moving now on to the meals, you'd have the meals when you wanted, I presume, your dinner and your tea. What would you normally have for dinner, by yourself, by choice?
Well, you had to join of a tin of McConaughey rations. Turnip, meat, potatoes, in a tin, which you had to warm it somehow if you wanted it warm. That must be in a tin. Then there'd be the bully beef. You shared, and then
so you'd have a third of a tin of McConaughey's and a bit of a tin of
bully beef. Yes.
What else? Anything else?
Biscuit, because the bread had probably had gone. You ate the bread first thing you did because it wouldn't keep too long. And if you'd been able to buy anything in the canteen, you might have brought extra tin or something up, that tin of fruit or something like that. And then there'd be baked beans. Could have half a tin probably between you.
Sounds like you got enough then.
Well, there was enough, but you're always hungry, put it that way.
What about the lack of variety? Did that get to you, or could you accept that?
Well, you're so hungry, you'd eat anything. You're out in the open all the time, it did help, I suppose, the appetite.
What about tea?
Tea, well, it'd be jam, happen a touch of cheese, and biscuit. Happen a couple of biscuits.
Right, moving into that, you said you had a stand to... in the evening as well, did you?
Yes.
That's the evening stand. What time would that be at?
As soon as dusk was moving towards you, stamp two.
And would that be the same as the morning stand too?
Yes, same thing, same system. Everybody watching on the alert.
Now, then you go into the night, which is when you said you did the work. Now, can we take this sentry business? How come you were on permanent night sentry duty? How did that arrive?
I was the last to join the platoon. The sergeant said to me, I'm going to put you on night duty. All you've got to do is to watch at front of you, and you see any movement, fire. He says, I'm taking a working party to repair the trenches further down. We shan't be too far away, and we'll come back if we hear any shots. He says, it'll give you confidence.
This on the first night?
Yeah. He says, all you've got to do is to watch for movements. And I was there while stand two, all night long. And all I was pestered with were rats running back and forth on between barbed wire. And I never saw a movement at all.
So you were on all night there?
Yes.
On your own?
Yes. And then, I think on the third night, there was a big raid, German raid on the next company. I think that took place somewhere about when I was on night.
And what did you see of that?
I didn't see anything, but I heard all the bombs being bursting and the rifle fire and the shouting. And I've never forgot the name of the first officer I saw being killed, and that was McClear, Lieutenant McClear. He was leading a bombing party to attack the Germans who got in at the back of the trench. They got through the next division, I think it was, or somewhere on at that part, and they worked their way around and were attacking from the back of the trench, which of course was a right handy place to go, wasn't it? Well, I heard him call out, bring the bombs, because the Germans gave him one, and it hit him here apparently and blew half his face off. First dead man I'd ever seen. They lost about 22 or 3 men that night in this bombing raid.
They called for reinforcements, did they, from your company to help deal
with it? No, the company dealt with it. No, we had to wait in case there was another attack from another end, you see. You couldn't go and leave your trench empty. They could deal with it by bringing up from the reserve platoon, you see, a company.
Now, you'd settle down, you were on this sentry duty every night. Were you on all night every night?
Yeah. Now, the funny thing about it is after that, another chap had to sit by your feet, and you took it in turns to watch out. I think they came to the conclusion it was too long to keep a man on all night watching, because things used to move what never did move. It was imagination. And that carried on all the time we were in the Ypres salient. Yes, there were about 23 casualties that night.
So you'd do how long and how long off with this chap at your feet? What stints did you pick up?
About 1 hour.
How did you keep awake?
You didn't. You could doze off. You were sat with your backside on his feet nearly to keep his feet warm if he were cold. And he'd just give his kick.
But the sentry had to stay awake, of course.
Oh, yes. If you were caught asleep, of course, you could be
court-martialed. Did you have any trouble staying awake as actual sentry?
No, I was that interested in watching the very lights and the shell bursts and all what were taking place all around. We seemed to be right at the tip of the salient, so as you look back left or right, they seemed to be right behind you. And then I used to listen to the transport moving. The rumble started gentle, and then it used to reach its pitch about midnight, and then it used to die away before stamp two.
Now, as sentry, you just had to look out.
Yes.
Had you been given any other instructions as to what to do if anything did happen?
Unless you'd been told otherwise, any movement at front of your trench, fire.
You said unless you'd been told different.
Well, that was if another company sent a patrol out and they may have got lost and not gone back to their own front and were in front of your company, which could happen many times.
So you were on this sentry duty in and out of the line for quite some time, while all the time you were at Ypres then?
No, later on I was taken to a working party to be instructed what was necessary to rebuild what had been blown in.